Okay, so the parable of the sower. Now, this is a story that we're all, I think, very familiar with. It's one that you get taught at Sunday school. And what's great about it is it's so easy to remember. It makes impact almost immediately. You get it very quickly. And that's a quality I want to reflect on. And of course, it's about really about receptiveness to Jesus, receptiveness to God. God's message, the seed, is distributed generously across the soil, and different parts of the soil, representing us, receive the message in different ways. Some seeds land on the footpath and have no impact. Just don't grow, nothing. Some lands on the rocky soil, where it grows a little bit and then it withers. And I suspect that many of us have seen that in some way, shape, or form. I remember going to a Christian event years ago, and the event was a huge success. And at the end of it, a young person came up to me and one of my closest friends and said, "I want to give my life to Jesus." And so naturally we said, "Fabulous." And so my friend led him through the prayers you make to make that dedication. And we said, "Please do come back tomorrow. There's a church service tomorrow. It'd be lovely to have a longer conversation with you about it." And the following morning, we got the message from him. And the implication was, he's a bit embarrassed. He got a bit carried away with it all. "Actually, no, thank you." Now, I don't know what the next stage in that conversation is. I'm not saying that that was necessarily an empty experience for him, but in that moment, at least, it felt very much like the rocky soil. A little bit of growth, but then no, thank you. And then there is the weeds that choke the plants, the cares of everyday life, but I'm not going to tell you about those. We all know what those are. And I think the thing that's nice about this is it feels so very real. It's so immediate to us. We can get to grips with it very easily. And then, of course, there is the seed that lands on the good soil, and it bears fruit 60 to 100 times or whatever it says. So the parable is about receptiveness, but actually when Jesus explains the parable to us, it's not actually, receptiveness isn't exactly what he says. It's about listening. And so if I go to verses, so it's Matthew 13, it's verses 13 to 15. This is what he says directly after this parable. "This is why I speak to them in parables. Though seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not hear or understand. In them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, 'You'll be ever hearing, but never understanding. You'll be ever seeing, but never perceiving.'" And I've always found that to be an extremely challenging set of verses. Yes, I've heard the parable of the sower. Yes, I understand its meaning. Thank you very much. But what does that mean to me? How does that change the way I do things or the way I think about things? I may have listened to it, but have I actually heard and internalized it? One of the episodes in my life that immediately came to mind when I reread that was when I was working on the committee for an organization, a Christian organization, I won't name it, and they had been exploring a wonderful new project, and I thought the project sounded very good. And so we sat in committee to discuss whether and how this project should take place. And on this committee, including two ordained ministers, people said, "Well, I've been praying, and I feel strongly God is saying yes. Let's do it. Let's make it happen. Let's speak these words for Jesus." And then the treasurer said, "Sorry, guys, we thought we had more money than we did. We've actually got less than we thought." And he went, "Oh, fine, we'll stop before we do it then." And I was thinking during this conversation, well, if God says yes, the treasurer saying no, which one do we go with here? But to my lasting shame, I'm afraid, standing out as a mighty man of God, I said nothing. I didn't speak up. and I should have. I regret it. But that would be an example of this. God has spoken, they have heard, but they haven't listened. They haven't taken it on board. And I think one of the other problems, which is linked to this whole business of listening, is we like to hear things that we want to hear. When I ask God to speak to me, and when I think God has spoken to me, one of the concerns I have is, am I hearing from God, or am I hearing from a God-shaped glove puppet with my own hand in it saying, yes, Nick, you're absolutely right. Perfect. God says so, so I must be. Hearing from God raises all kinds of challenges. And so it is about receptiveness, but it is also about listening. And listening to God is, in my view, increasingly difficult because there are so many aspects of the Christian message that in the world today raise red flags, cross boundaries. There's a red line there. We're not going to go down that route. I remember many years ago, Mike doing a sermon on rebuking. Well, everyone loves rebuking in this day and age. It's fabulous. And I remember thinking then, how in the real world would I actually go about doing that? How would I actually rebuke someone in the name of Jesus? And I'm guessing most of you are thinking, well, you just can't. It just wouldn't work. But it's in the Bible. There are various aspects of the Bible that are unpopular. Stuff about sin, stuff about hell or damnation. These things go down very badly. Though strangely enough, my instinct is that people are fairly aware of the existence of evil. Spreading the gospel, conversion. No, thank you. And in many contexts, just the mere act of saying, Jesus Christ is King. We can say it in here, because we're among a friendly audience, but how confident do we feel saying it elsewhere? One of the things I respect about the Anglicans, one of the many things I respect about the Anglicans, is they have a flag on a flagpole above the church right now with the word Jesus on it. They are prepared to speak that out to all comers. And so we're crowded. All these pressures on us. You can't say this, you can't say that. And so ultimately, if these stones represent the Christian message, there are many instances and scenarios where we say, we can't say that, so sorry, but no, this one just wouldn't go down well. The audience wouldn't take it, so. And this one, that one could get us in serious trouble. We could get called out and we could be told it crosses all kinds of sort of different boundaries and upsets people. So, but we're holding on to this one, so we're okay. We'll hold on to the fraction of the Christian message that still relates, that still works, but we'll ignore the rest. And my concern about this is, does that mean that who are we listening to? Where are we accepting our messages from if we are editing the Christian message according to our context? Sometimes, well, as I was thinking about this, I was wondering about whether the story of the sower should be edited. Editing the Bible is a wildly unpopular thing to do, but bear with me. Perhaps there should be an additional context. There's the path. There's the rocky ground, there's the weedy ground, there's the good soil. But I wonder if there's also the toxic soil which changes the nature of the seed and grows a slightly different plant. I'm not saying it should be added to the Bible, but there are different ways of receiving God's message. So we live in strange times. And there are many pressures on us, many of which come through devices like this, does anyone else find it odd that we all have these, well, many of us have these devices in our pocket which actually have an apple with a bite out of it on the back of them? Just let that one sink in. Anyway, it's a slight cheap shot, but anyway. But there is hope, because despite all the many contextual factors shaping the way we receive, the way we think about what we are prepared to accept about Jesus' word, it does actually seem as if the word is getting out there. There is something highly disputed, which is getting Christian statisticians' tails in a twist, which is the question, is there a quiet revival going on right now? According to the Bible Society, there has been an 8 to 12% increase in church attendance between 2018 and 2024. Not a stellar increase, but let's face it, after decades of singing about revival while the pew is empty, that is good news. There has been, since 2019 to the present, a 134% increase in the sale of the Bible within the UK. These are interesting factors. There are people, including me, who would like a lot more affirmation on these statistics before we accept them. But nonetheless, there seems to be something happening. The message seems to be getting out. Now, we can explore why that may be the case. There are various reasons that have been handed around in terms of explaining what may be an apparent increase in Christian engagement, shall we say, in the UK. Maybe this is about identity. At a time when identity and identities are becoming so much more prolific, people are reaching back to something to hold on to. Perhaps that's it. Maybe it is the hollowness of everyday life, always doing, never quite sure why. Maybe that's what's going on here. Maybe this is a knock-on from COVID, that time to stop and reflect and wonder what really this is all about. Maybe that's what's driving all of this. Or forgive me for trying out a very wild hypothesis. Maybe this is actually about God doing something assertive in the world. But it seems to me the message is getting through. And I began to wonder about this before I saw the statistics. And again, you're going to have to bear with me. When I watched the Amazon Prime series Fallout. Now, this is a very unpromising place to go looking for Christian inspiration. It kind of surprises me even saying it now that I ever watched it, but I was curious, so I did. Now, Fallout is a high-budget Amazon Prime series about a post-apocalyptic wasteland in the former USA where a young ingenue goes wandering about, exploring her surroundings, meeting all sorts of horrific and violent people and monsters. What is significant about this is two things. The first thing is this is not simply just one series that's been sort of knocked off. This is something Amazon's really put its weight behind. If you look at Amazon vans, there is a very good chance you will see an advert to Fallout on the side or back of the van. Now, where I'm going to with this is that this young woman, the heroine or the main character of the series with whom we are expected to relate, her main message, the message she has for all these horrible people in this post-apocalyptic wasteland, is do to others as you would be done yourself. Interesting. Core Christian message, right in the center. All the more striking because typically when I see stuff on TV or going through Netflix, etc., or other things like that, that is very much not the way it presents a Christian message. But that seems to be something that relates. That's a message that translates. And in fact, it got me thinking. I remember finishing an episode of Fallout and thinking, that's interesting. Why have they put that at the center? And my reflection on this is that whilst I've heard people from many different faiths and none criticizing Christianity for one thing or another, or Christian criticizing Christians for one thing or another, I have never heard anyone laying a finger on do to others as you'd be done to your, as you'd be done yourself. And I wonder if that's part of the message. Maybe that's part of what's going on here. And that sort of brings me, we're in this sort of tipping point now. I've been talking about how we listen to God, but actually the parable of the sower, quietly, has a second part to it. Because I suspect that everyone here, or the vast majority of us, would like to think that we are, or at least could be, the good soil. The soil that produces fruit. And that is the promise of this parable. Those who represent the good soil will produce fruit or additional grain or abundance. What it doesn't say, at least at first glance, is how that is to be achieved. How we are to create this abundance. Now, of course, there are natural answers to that. God moving within us, us responding to God's word, etc., things like that. But I wonder if the mere context of the parable itself contains a suggestion to us. Because parables are wonderful. And I wonder if when Jesus was telling us parables, he wasn't simply communicating a message to us. He was giving us ideas about how we can communicate messages. Parables are not preachy, or there is no need for them to be. They're down to earth. They're everyday. You can get to grips with them. They make sense. You're not speaking down to someone when you tell a parable. They're relatable. They can speak directly into someone's everyday life. And perhaps something that is increasingly relevant in the world today, they pass under the radar in the sense that you can deliver a Christian message without delivering a Christian message. And of course, Jesus knows about that. Parable of the Good Samaritan. And apologies, I'm not going to try not to tread on whoever's toes it is who's going to speak on that parable in a few weeks' time. Parable of the Good Samaritan, Jesus criticizes implicitly a Levite who does not care for the injured man who the Samaritan would later care for. Now, he can do that because it's within the context of a parable, but parables are a way of delivering a message even to a hostile audience. So there is much to be said about parables. They have a tremendous power. And something I wonder about is whether we need to start thinking more seriously about parables, not insofar as Jesus' parables relate to our own life, but how we use parables ourselves when we talk to other people. Now, as you know, I am a medieval historian. That's what I do. And here's an interesting feature, or I think it's interesting anyway, about the medieval period. They love parables, and they make them up. They tell themselves the stories the whole time. They particularly like stories about animals. So sort of parables where animals, say, a lion, a monkey, and a giraffe are all doing different things, a little bit like Aesop's fables. They're all playing humans roles. And there is some moral point to it. And there are hundreds and hundreds of these stories. They tell them all the time. And I'm going to share you my favorite one to give you an idea of what I mean. This is a tale from Germany in the 15th century. And it goes like this. That a woman and her daughter were taking a donkey to the market. They wanted to buy some things. It's a long way to the market. So the mother put her child on the donkey, and she walked beside them, and off they walked towards the distant town. And on the way, they went through a village. And they became aware that the people in the village were looking at them in a rather strange way. And then some people began to start laughing. And people began to point at this mother and daughter and say, "Look at them! Ridiculous! That little girl's making her poor mother walk in the dirt while she rides on the donkey. Wow, what a ridiculous family." So the mother thought, "Oh gosh, we can't have this. Okay, so this is what we're going to do. I'll ride on the donkey and you can walk." So off they go. Mother riding on the donkey, daughter walking beside them. And off they go to the next village. Next village, same thing happens. People start falling about. That old woman monopolizing the donkey while her little daughter is having to trail behind them? My goodness, what a joke of a pair. And so the mother thinks, well, this is really, really bad. Everyone's, you know, what are we going to do about this? So she has an idea. We'll both ride the donkey. So she gets on the donkey with her daughter, and off they go. Well, the donkey begins to suffer badly. And even before the next race, they can see why people are laughing at them as they point at them from the fields. It's perfectly obvious why this is a bad idea. So they both get off. And so by this point, the mother is getting deeply anxious about this scenario. And so she says, OK, I've got it. Get a pole. We will tie the donkey to the pole and we will carry the donkey. It's the only thing we haven't tried. So they put this poor donkey, who by this point is deeply confused, on the pole, and they carry the donkey off to the next village. And when they get to the next village, people don't even, you know, they don't even need to get near the village before people start just collapsing with laughter at the sight of this mother and daughter struggling with this rather worried-looking donkey on a pole between them. Once they've got through the village, the mother and daughter are exhausted, the mother's had enough, the daughter's had enough. This whole scenario is just beyond compare. And so the mother says, you know what, we really have messed up here. Untie the donkey, I'll ride in it for a bit, you can ride in it for a bit. If people want to laugh, they can laugh, but we're going to do things the way we want to do them. And the moral of the story is that whatever you do in life, people will laugh at you. So you might as well do your own thing. A 15th century German parable. Now, it's not a specifically Christian parable, but my point is these sorts of stories stick. Now, I wasn't sure if I was going to tell this one because, well, you'll see why I hesitated, but I think actually Rosemary wouldn't mind if I did. Because I went to see Rosemary and Colin a few days before Colin died. And we were talking, and he told me a story about his time about his many adventures in Africa. And on one occasion, he said that was driving in a Land Rover or similar down a muddy road. I think it was in Congo. And he came across a clearing, and he had to stop for some reason. And in the clearing, there was a witch doctor. And he got talking to the witch doctor, and the witch doctor suddenly believed in Christianity, almost instantaneously. And the witch doctor said, OK, I believe what you're saying. Will you help me to dig up these flowers around my house? And so Colin said, well, they're actually very nice flowers. Do we have to do that? And the witch doctor said, well, actually, they're part of what I was doing before, so I'd rather just get rid of them. So, OK, fine, we'll dig up the flowers. And that was it. He never saw the person again. He never came back. He was part of a very long journey. And his reflection on this was that he was reaping a harvest someone else had sown, that he provided a tipping point where this witch doctor, who had received instruction or guidance or inspiration from other people or from God previously, this was, however, the decision point that tipped him over the edge. And I'll never forget it. And the point I'm making is people love stories. They love stories. That's why we watch TV. That's why we listen to radio. That's why we read books. We love stories. One of my unfulfilled prayers, actually, is that I have always wanted to see evangelism done really, really well. Someone who's really good at it. And I don't think I have. I've seen people try. I've seen people succeed. But I don't really feel I've seen, wow, that person's good. Maybe it's best if that prayer isn't fulfilled in some respects. But when I have seen it done well, it's always been with stories. We have our testimonies. Of course we do. But we also have parables. And so my challenge for you, if we're to be the good soil, if we're going to listen to God, is what are the stories that we can tell? Where are the stories starting? Two women were walking to West Bridgeford. Or a brother and sister were buying some stationery from Amazon. And where are our stories about our faith that are rooted not in Judea in the first century AD, but are rooted right now? Just some food for thought. Thank you.